You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to our first of two podcasts on Duchenne muscular dystrophy hosted by Med Learning Group. This series is geared towards neurologists and other caregivers who manage DMD. In this episode, we'll be talking about standards of care for diagnosis, referral, and treatment, as well as disparities in care for this disease. My name is Chris, and I'll be the host of today's podcast. Joining me today is Dr. Emma Ciafaloni, a Robert C. and Rosalyn H. Griggs Professor in Experimental Therapeutics of Neurologic Disease, as well as a professor of neurology, pediatrics, and OBGYN at the University of Rochester in Rochester, New York. She's also Associate Chair of Research and Director of Pediatric Neuromuscular Medicine at the University of Rochester as well. Dr. Ciafaloni has been treating patients with Duchenne muscular dystrophy and other neurologic conditions for over 20 years, and she is widely published on the topic of muscular dystrophy and focuses heavily on sharing her knowledge in this area with other clinicians to help as many of these patients as possible. Dr. Ciafaloni, welcome to our discussion.
Thank you, Chris. It's a pleasure being here.
So let's start with you. I know I just introduced your academic background, but talk a little bit about your practice and how you got started in the field of muscular dystrophy.
Well, from very early on, I thought the neuromuscular diseases were a very fascinating group of diseases in neurology, and I knew that my focus was that, to really investigate new treatment for neuromuscular diseases. And the field has really moved from high-level diagnostic to really finally an explosion of disease-modifying treatment, experimental therapeutics, and new clinical trials. So it's been a very, very exciting past couple of decades, and things are definitely moving towards more therapy. So that's the exciting part.
Well, I know you're definitely at the forefront of the field, and we're certainly glad to have you with us as a result. How about some of the basics of Duchenne muscular dystrophy? Who does it affect, and what are some of the early signs and symptoms?
So Duchenne muscular dystrophy is the most common childhood onset muscular dystrophy. As you know, muscular dystrophy includes several different types of muscular dystrophy. But this is the most common childhood onset, and it's still a rare disease. The definition of the FDA for rare diseases is diseases that affect less than 200,000 people in the United States. And Duchenne, although being the most common muscular dystrophy with childhood onset, we're still talking about 1 in 5,000 and really prevalent cases somewhere between 10,000 to 12,000. So a rare disease and yet a very important one.
Briefly, let's talk about the pathophysiology of Duchenne muscular dystrophy. It's generally one of a small group of muscular dystrophies, as you mentioned, caused by a dysfunction of the dystrophin gene. Is it as simple as that, or is there more to it?
No, nothing is simple, but yes, it is a X-linked recessive disease. What that means is that it affects almost exclusively males, and females are carriers of the disease. It is a genetic disease, so although it can be inherited in the manner I just described, there is also a very high rate of de novo mutation, meaning that some cases are just the first case in the family. And it's really due to genetic mutation in the dystrophin gene. And what those mutations cause, it's a significant lack or really significant reduction of the protein dystrophin, which is indispensable to maintain muscle fibers integrity. So from very early on, every time the muscle contracts and are being used, they are susceptible to being breaking down. And over time, this really causes progressive muscle weakness, muscle wasting, and replacement of skeletal muscle with connective tissue. The gene is also expressed in the heart, so it also affects the heart with cardiomyopathy. And of course, breathing requires muscles such as the diaphragm and other thoracic muscles. So There is also later on respiratory failure. So that's in a nutshell is the how the disease is driven.
So I wanted to ask, is this a reversible condition or any part of it, is it reversible or is it entirely an irreversible condition that progresses, you know, permanently?
So that's $1 million question, but it's a very good question. This is definitely a progressive disease and is generally thought that the muscle that is lost, so muscle fibers that are lost, are not, they're not going to come back. But with the bias to that is really the therapeutic window, right? Because this disease doesn't get diagnosed until about 5 years of age, that's what we have always thought, that there is really the window of regeneration and replacement of muscle. Muscle have some capacity to regenerate, but that window, without really a significant genetic intervention, then closes, and what is lost cannot be recovered. Now, like we said, things are changing very rapidly, and there might be a window of opportunity that intervening with gene replacement at a very, very early age could actually change this idea. But generally, we have been treating the disease as, you know, slowing the disease progression rather than reversing it.
Okay, so it definitely starts at an early age. You mentioned it's found around 5 years old or earlier, sometimes later. So what does the progression look like through the early years and then into adolescence and now even into adulthood with some of the therapeutics that are available?
Yeah, so let me make it very clear that patients with Duchenne, they are born with the disease. So the disease process is already there from day one after birth. The problem is that we have studied now this very well, that the symptoms are not recognized until much later, and therefore the confirmation of the diagnosis is not made until a mean age of five. But that the generation of the muscle, that process has already started very early on. And so the first symptoms usually notice are delayed in walking. That's very common in Duchenne children. There is a waddling gait, toe walking. Really, these children have major difficulty keeping up with peers. Their running is not normal. They're unable to jump or have difficulty handling stairs and really frequent falls. And then one of the most important signs is that they have trouble getting up from the floor. They get up from the floor with what we call the Gower sign. Really, they have to push up on their legs in order to get up from the floor. And those are the signs that usually are recognized either by parents or school teachers, kindergarten teacher around 2.5, 3 years old. And yet the diagnosis is not confirmed until later on.
So is there anything that can be done to find it earlier than that? If your child isn't crawling at a reasonable age, or is there anything verbal with it? Like how is it possible to find it at, you know, 18 months or 2 years old?
Well, of course, yes. And some cases are actually diagnosed much earlier. And I think one of the key elements is really the public education and also pediatrician and providers in general education. But I think that the field is moving much faster now. And as you know, there has been a very strong push for newborn screening. So now that we start having more disease-modifying treatment, the idea of having actually a screen at birth for Duchenne muscular dystrophy is really moving forward. And I think that will really change the whole scheme of diagnosis from a clinical diagnosis to newborn screening. That ultimately will be the way to level the plan and really recognize the disease at birth or very, very early.
So I wanted to shift gears to disparities in care and identification. I know that gender isn't a big problem with identification of Duchenne muscular dystrophy, since nearly all patients are boys. But what do the data show about other disparities, for example, in differences in socioeconomic status or rural versus urban patients or along racial lines in identification of this disease?
Well, as we said, this is, after all, still it's a rare disease. So we have done studies about the diagnostic delay or the diagnostic odyssey for Duchenne, work done through surveillance with the CDC. And we have learned that when you look at population-based data, there is an overall very chronic and persistent delay in diagnosis. But when you really looked at subgroup like Hispanic and African American, that delay and all the diagnostic milestones are even more delay. So definitely that has been documented. We've also done some research to see when certain standard of care and, for example, standard treatment with corticosteroids is offered or implemented. And we know that those groups are also delayed in those two components of really access to multidisciplinary care and also initiation of corticosteroids, unfortunately. So that is out there. And therefore, newborn screening by definition also is a way to avoid that, because it's a universal newborn screening. So everyone will get screened at birth.
Okay, so let's end on this. What advice do you have for clinicians, perhaps at the primary care and pediatric level, to suspect and test for this disease and promptly refer to a specialist when necessary?
So this is very important. These are kids that, parents will go to the pediatrician first saying, falling, delaying walking. This could be kind of subtle gross motor delay. And I think that the tendency will be to just watch and wait. When indeed we have a very inexpensive, universally available test called the CK, which is universally abnormal and very high in these kids, that will really help decreasing the diagnostic delay, right? Any boy with a gross motor delay, let's say they're not walking by 18 months, really, a simple screening test with CK will really help. The other thing that is about a third of Duchenne kids also have more of a global developmental delay. They can have a whole spectrum that goes from ADHD to even autistic spectrum and language delay. So those also get even more delay in the diagnosis because they get put in the big group of global developmental delay. And nobody, it's very hard to think as a primary muscle problem. So we have done education at the CDC level and many other organizations to really think muscle and think CK early, because that CK test really, once you find a high CK, the diagnosis then follows quite rapidly. But usually the 2.5 years of delay between the first concern of parents with symptoms and the diagnosis, those 2.5 delays is really by this attitude of watch and wait before the CK is tested. So we can do better with that.
So this is true for most diseases, but obviously the earlier the diagnosis, the better patients do. Have you found that to be true with this disease too? I mean, I'm sure it is, but what are your thoughts on that? Patients who are diagnosed and on treatment, do they actually do better for this disease?
Well, absolutely. First of all, in that diagnostic delay, frequently these patients get unnecessary tests also. So that's another side of the coin that really they think of other problems and they do unnecessary diagnostic testing. But yes, absolutely. I think that accessing multidisciplinary care, we know that the natural history of the disease has dramatically improved and changed with this approach of early intervention, which include obviously early start of corticosteroids, but also very proactive treatment for respiratory and cardiac. So absolutely, the sooner the better. also it's important to remember that as tragic as it is to have a family with one Duchenne patient in the family, if the diagnosis is delayed, family don't know that they have a genetic disease, so the other pregnancies are at risk, and therefore sometimes the first kid is diagnosed when other siblings are already born also with the disease. So genetic counseling, family planning is also an important aspect of the sooner the better.
Well, that's a great stopping point. We're going to elaborate a little bit on the multidisciplinary care element in our second podcast, but thank you very much for being with us, Dr. Ciafaloni. It's obviously clear that this is a condition that, while rare, places a huge burden on those affected, particularly if not identified earlier and then managed appropriately. But that's all the time we have for this podcast. I would like to thank our expert, Dr. Emma Ciafaloni, for taking the time to speak with us today about Duchenne muscular dystrophy. And thanks to all of our listeners for joining us. Hopefully you're able to tune into our second podcast in this series, in which we'll talk a bit more about treatment and the multidisciplinary care for DMD, as I mentioned. This podcast was brought to you by MedLearning Group. MedLearning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. I would also like to give a special thank you to our educational grant supporter, Pfizer Incorporated, who provided an unrestricted educational grant for this activity. Thank you very much and have a great day.